I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, every weekday, 9 to 11 o'clock, offering you up a safe space if you're an independent thinker. We do not have to play the party game. We don't have to play the hero worship game. We just call it like we see it here. This is Friday, so next hour we will do False Flag Friday, where we take a look at the disaster that is unfolding foreign policy-wise. Last week we talked about Kazakhstan. This week it's all about Ukraine and the imminent invasion by Russia that they're trying to convince you needs to be thwarted with military action involving the United States. And then the final 30 minutes of the show this week on the crazy train, where I have my clip-a-palooza of some of the more absurd and insane things going on around the world, particularly spouted out by the media. First of all, I want to wish everybody a happy anniversary to the insanity that has gripped the world. Do you know that today is the 2-year anniversary of the first confirmed COVID case? It has been quite a blur, hasn't it? 2 years ago, I believe it was in Washington State, they confirmed the first COVID case, and we quickly slipped straight into mass mental breakdown here in the United States. And for many people, judging by my experience last night at Whole Foods, most people are still gripped by this panic and insanity. There were so many people in Whole Foods last night wearing a mask that I thought I was going to be asked to leave for the first time in, I don't know, maybe a year. I think eventually I did see another maskless human. We exchanged a smile. Oh, it was nice. I think it was kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge smile, kind of a us silently mocking the people still walking around in their cloth masks that the CDC itself has told you, CNN has told you, these things offer no protection. But you soldier on with this face binky. And so we smiled, but obviously the insanity is still gripping us. But 2 years ago today, we decided to throw all in with insanity here in the United States. You can look previous to those 2 years, maybe it was just our fate. We had already pretty much gone wackadoodle long before that, but 2 years ago today, happy anniversary. COVID did claim another life, according to the news. Very sad. Meatloaf, the rock star, is gone. That album, you know, I remember looking back when I used to know every single rock star and their bio. I knew the drummer, the bass player, the guitarist, the lead singer of every band. You could still quiz me on a lot of 80s and 90s bands, and I'm going to be able to tell you the name of the album, who sang it, you know, when the drummer, first drummer quit, second drummer started. I used to know everything. And one of the statistics I remember is that Meatloaf was on the charts for forever with his Bad Out of Hell album. But listen to this. I looked it up to try to get an accurate number of that. Meatloaf's Bad Out of Hell album spent 522 weeks in the UK's album chart. That was as of June 2019. That's equivalent to more than 10 years Bad Out of Hell was on the charts in the UK. And Paradise by the Dashboard Light, come on. One of the greatest songs ever, and one of my favorite songs growing up. And I remember, it's funny how you can remember these certain situations. I can remember being in a car. My sister was a DJ at WZZQ. She was big into music. She was a musician herself, had a fantastic voice. She could play the guitar, the piano, the flute, very musically inclined. And so she and I, even though she was 8 years older than me, she and I kind of bonded a little bit on music. I've told the story before. I remember for first grade show and tell, everybody's showing off pets or toys. I walked up to the front of the class with a portable record player, plopped it down, and then put a Foreigner, Cold as Ice and Hot Blooded. It was the A and B side of a 45. I went up there and put these singles on the record player, and then I guess I just stood in front of the class and bobbed my head while we all listened to this music. My sister had a profound influence on me musically, but I can remember exactly what car we were in and where we were. We were on Brecken Drive in Northeast Jackson, coming back from the grocery store, when Paradise by the Dashboard Light came on the radio, and I remember telling my sister how much I loved this song. And her telling me for the first time, breaking it to me, this was long, you know, before MTV was really huge, how ugly he was. No offense, rest in peace, Meatloaf, but he's not your typical rock star. I mean, I can remember the moment that she told us, really? She said, have you ever seen him? He was not an attractive guy. And he was actually turned down, I think, for a couple of years. They tried to peddle this huge album, Bat Out of Hell. And nobody would take it because people were saying, well, you just don't look like a rock star. You know, it was a very theatrical album in the first place. And they just didn't want to take it, saying that he just didn't look the part. And so some little, I believe an Epic label, one of their subsidiaries, ended up signing him and releasing Bat Out of Hell. And they got 522 weeks on the UK album charts. And here in the United States, it was a few years, I believe, that it spent on the charts here. Sold tens of millions of copies. But it was, you know, it's a sad day to see Meatloaf go. I was a big Rocky Horror Picture Show fan, too, and he was in that as well. So we haven't seen his vaccine status. Apparently they say he did die of COVID. He was opposed and apparently spoke out against the Australian treatment of their citizens. But he could have been vaccinated as well. I don't know. Vaxxed people should be totally against the totalitarianism. It's like maybe they've got something in the shots that makes you become an absolute sheep after you get it if you don't stand up against vaccine mandates. Even if you want the shot, you should be opposed to mandates. So we don't know his vaccine status, but they say he died of COVID. Rest in peace. Meatloaf. You know, on the COVID front, I've been wanting to know, have I had COVID? Do I have the antibodies? Sheer curiosity. I do not fear COVID. I do those things for my health. I fast. I take vitamin D. I take supplements. I try to eat mostly organic. So I don't fear really any disease. But I have been curious. I just refuse to take any test. I'm not going to participate in the theater. I'm not going to take a test to see if I have it. I don't want to take a test for the antibodies. I'm not going to wear a mask. COVID is something for y'all. It really doesn't affect me. I know every day that there's a risk in life. I sent the station owner here, Matt, a video earlier. There's a video out there of a couple of guys standing. I think it looks like they're maybe in a cell phone store or something like that. All of a sudden, a bull comes crashing through the front door and basically gores one of the guys standing by the counter. They're both just kind of looking at their phones, living their life. This is just security camera. This bull just randomly comes crashing through the front glass door and hooks this one guy and carries him off. That's all you can see in the security footage. That's life to me. That guy, myself, I could come up with a 50,000 scenarios of how my day might turn out. I wouldn't include being charged by a bull in the middle of a retail shop, but it happens sometimes. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the uncertainty of life. But I have been curious to know if I've had COVID, and I may have confirmed that I have had COVID, and I've got a symptom that is still going. I ran across this video. It just like showed up in my feed, and this is interesting. See if this maybe applies to you as well.
Imagine this. You wake up in the morning, pour yourself a hot cup of coffee, and start frying some eggs. But something's off. You don't smell the earthy aroma of coffee or the buttery eggs. Instead, you smell cigarette smoke, sewage, or rotting garbage. People who've gotten COVID-19 haven't just been losing their sense of smell and taste. A subset of them have been smelling and tasting the wrong things. Like, really, really wrong. Even after they recover from the virus.
All meat tastes rotten.
Everything kind of started smelling the same with the scent of rotting garbage.
It's like rotten feces.
Rotting flesh.
Rotten flesh.
A gasoline-ish taste. Smells like something burning and rotten all at the same time.
Coffee smells like sewage.
And for some people, the distorted smells aren't going away.
You know, doctors have said there's a chance that this might never come back.
It's known as the COVID smell, or as scientists call it, parosmia, a condition that distorts your sense of smell.
So I run across this video. This is a long one, but I have had for the past 6 months or so, I have had this, I would just be in my car, laying down at night, doing whatever, and I get this smell of what is kind of like cigarette smoke. It's got a cigarette smoke tint to it, but not quite cigarette smell. It's burnt something, but it's not like electrical fire. It's not like burning wood. It's this odd thing, and for it has been driving me insane because, of course, I immediately check my breath. When it first started, I started just immediately brushing my teeth. I said, oh, my God, does my breath smell like this? Where is the smell coming from? I haven't been around anybody smoking. Nobody smokes in my car. I haven't, you know, there's nowhere I would have been exposed, really, to large amounts of cigarette smoke. I haven't been out at the subway lounge. I don't know if you ever went to the subway lounge, but you basically had to burn your clothes the next day. There was nothing worse than a hangover and then picking up the clothes that you laid on the floor from the subway lounge the night before. I don't know if this basement room that was just nothing but the top half of the room was just a soup of cigarette smoke. I haven't been around anything like that, and this smell has been driving me crazy. I thought it was me somehow. What has happened to me? You know, me and health. I'm trying to think of all kinds of things that I could be. What have I eaten? Am I off-gassing something? As nasty as that sounds, I just, it's been driving me crazy. But this may confirm that maybe I've had COVID, and I didn't even notice it. I've had no symptoms of anything all the way through this thing, but I guess maybe it got a hold of me at some point and did something to my nose. It's not a life-altering thing. Most, you know, 99% of the time, it's not happening. But just at the weirdest times, that smell will come up. My sense of taste is fine. My sense of smell is fine. But this burnt smell. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe I've had it. Maybe I am not only a hero in the control group, but I am also possessing the antibodies and flexing my natural immunity. I've made it through the Omicron as well. So just very interesting. So I don't know if anybody else has experienced this, but you may too be a COVID recovered human being who can go on with your life. I'm actually a little excited about this. The smell's a little annoying, but now that I know what it is, and it just comes in fits and spurts just every now and then, it's not really a big deal. Just very interesting stuff. I don't know what the hell they did with this virus in a lab to make this one of the side effects, but just add this to the list of crimes against humanity for Anthony Fauci. Be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know?
I broke my fast this morning. Did about 4 days, water-only fast, a little bit of sea salt to get electrolytes, and that makes me sound like something from Idiocracy. It's got electrolytes, but it also has minerals, and so I did that. But I tell you, I'm having a love affair here in the studio with my coffee. I loaded up with butter and coconut oil, and I haven't been able to do that for 4 days, and I got to tell you, I'm just... I'm looking over at it, kind of winking at it. I'm having such a good time. And I've got an avocado ready for lunch. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to cut that thing into cubes, put a little sea salt on it. I'm telling you, I'm excited to get off the air today and interact with this avocado. Oh, well, anyway, another one in the books. Cleaned up my system a little bit. I You know, I'm always worried about getting too repetitive on this show. I talk a lot about the Federal Reserve. A lot of people's eyes glaze over. I don't do anything on this show. If you've listened for any period of time, you know, I don't cover a lot of the popular stuff. As a matter of fact, I am your contrarian on conservative radio, and I contradict a lot of the most popular themes out there in conservative talk radio. But always, you know, I'll talk about the Fed, I'll talk about COVID, I'll talk about taxes, I'll talk about the drug war, and I'm conscious of trying to be too repetitive. But I put segments in. I do health. I do craziness on the left. I try to have a pretty diverse repertoire of things to talk about. But I ran across this, and maybe this is going to embolden me to just keep doing what I'm doing and not worry about it. This is Winston Churchill in a quote of the day today. If you have an important point to make, don't try to be subtle or clever. Use a pile driver. Hit the point once, then come back and hit it again. Then hit it a third time. A tremendous whack. That's Winston Churchill. So that's what I'm doing. We're going to talk about financial stuff here in a little bit. I don't know that the American people have any idea where we are right now. I've been kind of looking across the landscape and was talking to a friend that he and I will talk economics for hours on the phone. And we were really kind of parsing through where we are right now. I think the average American has no earthly idea what may be in store for us. It's not good. This is not doom and gloom, though. A lot of people make a lot of money in depressionary times, or if they position themselves well, or if they get out of the stock market, and then there's always huge bargains at the very bottom. I don't know when this ends, but I think we're careening towards a crisis. I'll explain that in just a second. Ron Paul, the great Ron Paul, quote of the day says, "What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve the special interests?" Yeah, what if? Well, Ron, I spend every Friday from 10 to 10:30 at least trying to wake the American people up and realize that these wars are based on lies and we're at the cusp of another one of them. And last quote of the day is Bob Marley. Said, "Better to die fighting for freedom than to be a prisoner all the days of your life." Bob Marley. I can't begin to tell you, and I guess I'll pile drive this point home again. Whether it's Meatloaf or Bob Marley, both who have passed away, both with all of their flaws, with whatever you think about their personal lives or their choices. You know, Bob Marley was a big burner. Marijuana was certainly a part of his life. Of course, he was Jamaican, so it's a big part of their lives down there. Way more honorable than people who serve in public policy positions. Way more honorable, Meatloaf and Bob Marley. Actually, they contributed more to humankind, Bob Marley and Meatloaf, than Mike Pompeo has ever dreamt of. Mike Pompeo is a net negative. Now, I don't even want to say net. He's just a real negative. Joe Biden, a negative. These people that we put up in these altars, and then we go out into the streets and fight with our friends and our relatives for. I'm on Team Biden. I'm on Team Trump. Meatloaf and Bob Marley, way more positive impact for planet Earth than any of these people that hold power and hold sway over us. Anyway, I wanted to get into some of the financial stuff because, you know, we are at a real crossroads right now. And I don't even know. A crossroads implies that, you know, we can make a correct choice, right? It depends on what path you go down. You're going to take the right path or the wrong path. A lot of us in our lives come to crossroads. We are at a crossroads, but both paths, or I guess if you're at a crossroads, there's actually three, right? You come to it. There's one right, one left, and one straight ahead. I see really two paths for us financially right now. Neither of them are good. And it is it's a creation of policies, particularly from the Federal Reserve, from our federal government. And I don't know that Americans really understand. Americans are trapped in this idea of, well, we've got this inflation, and the job market's a little screwed up. But so many Americans believe, but if we just get rid of the Biden administration, if the Republicans could win in the midterms, then we can fix this inflation. If we get rid of Joe Biden, if Trump comes back, we'll fix this inflation. You could not be wronger. You couldn't be more wronger than my use of the word wronger. And so we're going to take a look when I come back about where we are right now financially, because the inflation has been a game changer. The American people are noticing the effects of bad policy, and they're noticing them in a big way. Now, for some reason, lack of education, willful ignorance, people refuse to acknowledge the actual root cause of these things. And again, conservatives and Republicans love to blame Joe Biden for the inflation. I know that's fun. Your tribe cheers for you. When I point out the fact that Trump is also responsible for this inflation, the tribe boos me or runs away. Unfortunately, it's just a fact. But this idea that you think you're going to fix this with some kind of political wrangling, you couldn't be wronger. And when I come back, I'll tell you kind of where we are. And again, this is not doomsday stuff. A lot of people do really well when times are tough. If you position yourself, if you got your mind right, if you understand what's going on, then this may be a time for you to change your family tree. But for the clueless people out there who just believe they can just wait and vote, and then sometime between 2024 and 2028, Donald Trump's going to fix it all, you're going to be the ones left holding the bag. We'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with me.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I've been asked to make a public service announcement here, and I think it's a good one. Let me get to it here. Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights has put out kind of a call to action here that I think is worth people's attention. Right now, in the House of Representatives, Representative Eubanks is authored a bill to ban vaccine passports and mandates in the state of Mississippi, and they are asking that people call or email Speaker Gunn. His number 601-359-3300, or PG-15. Well, I got to tell you, when I looked at that originally, it looked like a pig 15. It's not pig, but you can remember it that way. It's pig without the I, 15, PG-15 at house.ms.gov, and tell him to put Representative Eubanks' bill out to a single committee. The double referral we have learned here with Americans for Prosperity is the death knell for most bills. So this needs to go to a single committee. But email or call Speaker Gunn and tell him to advance this bill against vaccine mandates and passports and get out in front of this thing. February 1st being the deadline for these bills. It can't languish and not be addressed. So contact Speaker Gunn on behalf of Eubanks bill, and I imagine you can visit for more information. Go to the MPVR Facebook page. I can't remember what it's called. I should do a better job at referring. They're just a great organization, and I appreciate that. Now, have you ever read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People? Well, I apparently got an alternative copy that's, you know, How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. I will say I'm not for anything that bans private employers from forcing vaccinations on their employees. Wait a second. Hold on. Bear with me. Because as a libertarian, what I understand is that when you let the government control one aspect, they will control every aspect. And this is more government control of private business. I know it's what I want. I don't want any employer to mandate its employees, but the onus of employees who do not wish to get vaccinated is to stand up against it themselves, not ask the government to protect you. I know this alienates people. I know it's not a popular position. I hate the mandates too. Starbucks has removed their mandate. Participate in Starbucks. Carhartt, the clothing manufacturer that's for the working man, they are leaving their vaccine mandate in place. Boycott Carhartt. Who was the other company that kept it in place? We were talking about them the other day. It'll come to me. Any employer who forces their employees against their will to get a shot should be shunned, should be named, should be shamed, and the employees should stand up. They should organize themselves, and they should just walk the hell off the job and threaten them. And some people may lose a job, and that is heartbreaking. I've lost jobs. It sucks. But I don't like the idea on the conservative side of us not liking the government coming in and forcing the mandates, asking the government to come in and protect us from the mandates. Sometimes we got to do the heavy lifting ourselves. That being said, I know what I'm saying is not popular. Eubanks' bill to stop vaccine passports is good enough for me. We certainly need to stop that. So anyway, contact Speaker Gunn's office, get this bill its day in committee. I wanted to look at this financial stuff. One of the things that I ran across the other day that gave me kind of an uh-oh. I've been waiting. You know, I've been looking at the stock market as being in a bubble, admittedly, since about 2016, maybe earlier than that. Do not take any investment advice from me whatsoever. I understand the insanity of what's going on in the stock market. I understand the insanity that is the metaverse, but I believe it's going to be successful. I have to learn to not use my logical brain when it comes to societal-wide issues and realize that most people will do something horribly irrational. So I believe the metaverse might be a good investment now. Again, that's not investment advice. I'm terrible at that. But the metaverse is so absurd that I think it may actually work on a large number of people, which will make it successful. So I've been thinking that the stock market was overvalued back, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. But I saw a statistic the other day of how many, as the stock market indices have been reaching record highs. They've pulled back recently, but they were reaching record highs as late as the end of last year, beginning of this year. I saw a statistic about how many stocks within these indices are actually down far, far farther than the indexes would indicate. As a whole, the technology stock drop, this is for the NASDAQ, the tech stock exchange, the technology stock drop of recent weeks doesn't look too bad, with the NASDAQ composite index down 9% from its November record high. But if you look beyond that number, 36% of the stocks in the index have plunged at least 50% from their 52-week highs, meaning you have had just a few basically globalist names. Your Apple, Microsoft, Netflix took a dump a couple of days ago on their subscriber news, but it's just been a few names. The FANG stocks are typically referred to as your Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google. They have been pulling these indices up, but it means that just a few strong stocks, because of the weighting of the averages, don't have time to get into that, but because these stocks really kind of dictate what's going on these NASDAQ or the S&P, these things are all weighted towards the biggest companies. So the biggest companies have been doing great because they're at the trough of free Fed dollars. But underneath that, most of these indices are in bear territory, hardcore, again, with the NASDAQ. 36% of the companies in the NASDAQ are down over 50%. And now we're seeing some things like Netflix just crater. We are in boy, you hate to use this word because it's so overused, unprecedented bubble situation in the United States right now. And I want people to understand this. We are in a stock market bubble. The multiples of what stocks are worth, what they're trading at, is at historic highs. Tesla at one point, where the average price-to-earnings ratio is around 15, 16. That's kind of typical. Tesla at one point was trading at something like 1,000. 1,000 times earnings. We're in a bubble in the stock market, we're in a bubble in real estate, and we're in a bubble in the bond market. And the bond market is the biggest market on planet Earth. It dwarfs the stock market. And the bubble that has been building in the bond market has been going on for, anyone, 40 years. It's been a 40-year bull market. That's not natural. That is because of what the Federal Reserve has done, and I don't have time to explain the price action of bonds. But we've been in a 40-year bull market in bonds, and if the bond market actually were to have serious problems, you really don't understand the catastrophe that is. And so what we find ourselves at now, that the game changer is, look, a lot of things have been really absurd and didn't make any sense, didn't make any logical sense in the financial markets for quite a period of time. The Federal Reserve kind of quietly in the dark of night injecting trillions of dollars into the overnight markets. It definitely was a sign that something was not right. It wasn't talked about in the mainstream media. It was no big deal. Trump was still in office, so all the conservatives thought everything was going great. They kept saying the greatest economy that we've ever seen in all of our history. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve is having to inject trillions of dollars overnight to keep the banking system together. But you just keep on saying it was the greatest economy ever. And so there have been a lot of things over the past really 13 years now that have not made any logical sense, but they've been able to manipulate these things because people accepted narratives like, oh, this is the greatest economy we've ever seen. They leave out the parts about the debt acquired to create the economic activity under the Trump term. Ditto with Obama. Obama known to have presided over one of the greatest stock market returns during his presidency, had nothing to do with Barack Obama. He wasn't friendly to business. He wasn't pro-innovation. He just had a Federal Reserve that would print up a ton of money and knocked interest rates down to zero, and we were off to the races. But conservatives are open to that message because you don't like Barack Obama. But when I criticize the economy under Donald Trump, you really bristle and say, no, he did all these great things. No, the Federal Reserve was doing the same things under Donald Trump they did under Barack Obama to prop all this crap up, to further inflate these bubbles. It drove me crazy that Trump pointed this out during his campaign, and then as soon as he got into office, he cheerleaded the Fed to do exactly the same things he warned us about when he was campaigning, a complete 180-degree shift, because he wanted his stock market to be the greatest ever, and he crowed about it for 4 years. But all it was doing was inflating the bubble that he identified in 2016 to even more absurd levels. The stock market bubble, the bond market bubble, and the real estate bubble that we're in right now. So while this insanity has been going on for a long time, the Federal Reserve has been able to kind of paper over it. You know, shove a few trillion dollars into the overnight repo markets, send out some stimulus checks, print up money for stimulus checks, keep interest rates down at zero. And they've been able to do that because the American people have just been kind of, you know, fat and happy. As long as your 401k is still going up, you don't really care. I mean, we'll talk about the debt, but we don't really care because we don't understand economics at all. As long as your 401k is going up, that's fine. That's all that anybody really cares about. Well, it does not end well. This is how empires collapse. Now, inflation is the game changer. I've always just kind of sat back and said, and I resigned myself 3 or 4 years ago to understanding, well, the Federal Reserve is going to do whatever it needs to do to keep the housing market propped up, the bond market propped up, and the stock market propped up. But now they are at an inflection point. They have a decision to make. There's only two paths that I can see of what they need to do right now, and they have to make a decision between these two things. Are they going to continue to try to prop up the stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, and the greater economy? Not let us fall into a real depression. But if they do that by keeping interest rates low, they are probably going to sacrifice the U.S. dollar. And that could be the worst thing that could happen to our country. You want to talk about your standard of living changing? Let the Federal Reserve keep propping up all of these bubbles that they created and letting them sacrifice the U.S. dollar. Now, their other choice is they raise interest rates to try to save the U.S. dollar, and in the meantime, they will collapse the U.S. economy. And really, I should do an hour on this, although I hesitate to. I don't know how people, if people are truly interested in this, but if the Federal Reserve allows interest rates to go up, when I come back, I did some mortgage calculations. I'll tell you something about the price of homes, what happens to the real estate market, and that's just one consequence of letting interest rates go up. I think they should. I think we need to take a big fat depression right in the middle of our face so we don't leave this crap show for our kids. It's on us. We should take the pain because we allowed this to happen. You Republicans allowed it to happen. You Democrats allowed this to happen. You independents allowed this to happen. Us adults, the greatest generation, the baby boomers and Gen Xers like myself, we allowed this to happen. We cheered for the politicians that ushered in this financial ruin. We need to pay the price. We need to take the pain, not our kids. If they let interest rates go up, and they really may lose control where they can't control, but they are saying that they're going to raise rates 3 or 4 times this year. I'm going to show you what that would do to the housing market when I come back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place. to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right, we're going to take a look at the economic crisis that I think is we're at the precipice of. I don't know they can put it off any longer. The Federal Reserve has been able to buy time because the American people were fat and happy. You had your streaming, you had your sports ball. Then we've been distracted for a couple of years with the coof. But now inflation is roaring. The Federal Reserve, you know how a lot of companies and governments said, look, COVID is such a threat to the life of people. I mean, this is just such a deadly disease that we are going to force people to get vaccinated. And then they would say, and the deadline is like 4 months out. How does that make any sense? If you got to save a life, I mean, there seems like there should be some immediacy to this, right? But they put the deadline out like 4 or 5 months, showing that it's not about health, it's not about life, because if it was, they would make it the next day. They'd give you 1 week to get the shot, not 4 months. No, I'm glad they gave us the time, because COVID is not that threat that they try to presented at. But the Federal Reserve's doing the same thing right now. They said, oh, this inflation, it doesn't look like it's transitory. Those of us who understand economics knew it wasn't. So we need to act against inflation. We're going to have to start raising rates. When do they say they're going to do it? In March. Inflation, we get huge inflation numbers. John Williams, he has a site called Shadow Stats. What he does is he calculates inflation the way they used to before they started monkeying around with the calculations, where they changed it to make the American people not realize that the inflation, so they could continue to say our inflation is only 1.5%. They just changed the way they calculated it and put a bunch of hocus pocus in it. He calculates it the way it used to be calculated. He calculates inflation the same way they did 40 years ago using those calculations, 1980 calculations. Inflation is right now over 14%, not the 7% they're telling you. Most of us understand that 7% number is ridiculous because we live in the real world. The difference between then and now, so inflation was raging late 70s, and again, people were stupid and they blamed Jimmy Carter. A lot of you still do. Joe Biden's just another Jimmy Carter. Look at Joe Biden with his inflation. Look, if somebody tells you it's Bidenflation, they don't understand economics. I'm sorry, it's tough love, but it's true. But the difference between then and now is we had a relatively strong economy in 1980. On an October weekend in 1979, the Fed chairman Paul Volcker delivered the so-called Saturday Night Special, a radical and unexpected tightening of money policy. So in one night he came in and said, boom, inflation is roaring. We're going to start raising interest rates. And he ultimately rose them, took them up to where home mortgages were, I think, 19%. You could get CDs back in the day for 16, 17% for a stable CD. And the economy crashed in the early 1980s. We had a big recession, but it was necessary to contain inflation. Here's the problem. We were stronger back then. We're not strong now. So if they raise rates, they crater everything. I want to tell you some mortgage calculations. I took the time to do the math, so I'm going to share this with you. Hopefully I can do it justice. If you take out a $250,000 loan on your house, or for a house, if your interest rate is 3%, which it's been for the past year or so, your payment's about $1,400, $1,401. If interest rates go up to 4%, your payment jumps up to $1,581, another $180 a month. 5%, which is getting closer to something sane, your payment goes up to $1,729. You add a $328 to your payment. If interest rates are at 6%, which historically is not high, your payment goes to $1,886, so a $485 increase. To go back to that, so you got a $250,000 house, but people can only afford that $1,400 payment, right? That's why they bought the $250,000 house, because they say, oh, I can afford $1,400 a month, and it's only 3%, so I can afford a $250,000 house. If interest rates go to 6%, if you can still only afford that $1,400 payment, the value of the house that you can buy is $185,000. Which really means to me, now there's other moving parts in this, building cost, replacement cost, these kinds of things, but that the $250,000 house right now is really, at 6% interest rates, is really only worth $185,000, a $65,000 loss on that house. Raising interest rates will decimate the real estate market. It will decimate the stock market. it will decimate the bond market. And we will be plunged into something that is much more serious than the financial crisis ever thought about, and it will make the depression of the 1930s look pretty tame in comparison. And the Federal Reserve has created all of this. This is enemy number one. When it comes to economics, it's not Joe Biden. He's terrible. He's a train wreck, but he's only one in a long line of train wrecks. Donald Trump signed trillion-dollar deficits and jawboned the Federal Reserve to take interest rates back down to zero many, many times during his administration because he wanted to take credit for the stock market bubble. So we are at a crossroads. The Fed has to make a decision. Do we crash the economy or do we crash the U.S. dollar? And I'm not sure which way they go. I don't know they have the stomach or the political will to trash the U.S. economy. And as I say, us adults, we should take this one on the chin. Because leaving it to our children is much more irresponsible. If they keep papering this thing over and letting it go and let the bubbles get bigger, then this will collapse on our children's watch. And that is a crime against future generations. We'll see which way they go. Be right back. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. This is my radical little segment outside of the Overton window trying to explain, to particularly to conservatives, how badly we were duped into supporting endless wars at the behest of other countries or industries, the military-industrial complex. There's all kinds of people who make huge money, as Smedley Butler knew back in the 1930s, Eisenhower knew in the 1950s, Kennedy knew in the 1960s, and Ron Paul knew in the basically his whole career from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. But people are a little bit more open to these things. Here's just another shining success story of the Wall Street warmongers that infest both political parties that run this nation, the psychopaths in charge of foreign policy under every administration, yes, including the one you love. How about this? Russia and Iran have unveiled plans to hold maritime joint naval exercises with China on Friday. The somewhat rare naval drills will take place in the northern Indian Ocean and is part of a pattern of clearly deepening cooperation between the unlikely allies at a moment each is facing intense pressure from anyone, Washington, including U.S. sanctions. So we have driven the unlikely allies of China, Russia, and Iran into each other's loving arms, all because the psychopaths in Washington, D.C. do what they do. Sanctions, endless sanctions, endless hand-wringing, pearl-clutching, everything that we do is in the name of democracy and love and human rights. Everything someone else does, even though it's exactly the same, is aggression. I want you to listen to this clip. This is part of my drinking game. You got to drink every time one of our foreign policy hacks accuses another country of doing exactly what they do.
That impacts our ability to trade, our ability to live freely, and ultimately could find its way to our shores. So the United States has long been the protector of this free, democratic, open order.
Drink. This is all about Ukraine, and the United States government was at the tip of the spear in overthrowing the democratically elected government of Ukraine. Similar to the way we toppled the democratically elected government of Iran back in 1953 in Operation Ajax. And then there's a whole long laundry list of things, of democracies that we upended and installed a U.S. puppet between 1953 and 2014 when we overthrew the government of Ukraine. Yet our people, with a straight face, get up in front of the world and say, we are a defender of all democracies and national sovereignty around the world.
And if we don't lead, no one else will.
There's a great Republican talking point. I don't know who this is saying. I'm not sure if this is Blinken or not. It's one of the State Department thugs. This is what conservatives, I hear it on conservative radio all the time. We need to be leaders out there in the world in this military adventurism. We need to lead. Joe Biden's not leading enough. Leading just means provoking and bossing other countries around. I have to tell you, they don't like that. I don't know why people can't grasp the fact that other countries, they kind of like their countries, too. they don't like endless sanctions and deciding who they can trade their oil with. They don't like that. We wouldn't like it. Is it that difficult of a concept for people to grasp?
And this is a point Secretary of State Antony Blinken emphasized today as he visited Ukraine.
It makes other countries think that they, too, can violate the rules of international peace and security and put their narrow interests ahead of the shared interests of the international community.
Okay, drink. This is the Secretary of State of a country who has invaded, what, 6 or 7 countries in the Middle East just in the last 20 years. This would be considered a war crime if any other country ever did it. But we just somehow get a free pass. We give ourselves a pass because we've got the military. We've got the U.S. dollar. We just say, when we do it, it's okay. Anybody else, you're violating international norms. Absolutely insane stuff. The Fox News warmongers are certainly jumping on this Ukraine stuff. They want to make sure that they keep conservatives on the war path constantly. This is one Fox News show.
Quickly, 10 seconds. If, in fact, Russia goes into Ukraine, will China go into Taiwan or try to take that over?
We don't know the sequence with which they will time it, but it ups the odds dramatically, and they're already very high. Yeah. Yes, it will say to China, you can do this, and America will release another Spotify list from Secretary of State Tony Blinken.
Oh, yeah, see, that's Fox News playing the game, keeping you on the team. The Democrats are really weak on foreign policy. If we don't start war with Russia right now over Ukraine, that's just going to embolden the Chinese to invade Taiwan. We must... Are you people still falling for this garbage off of Fox? And it's on everywhere. I'll play a clip from MSNBC in a second. Here's more Fox News warmongering. And for this one, they brought in... a State Department official from the administration of anyone, Donald Trump to warmonger more on Fox to convince the Fox News viewer that you're on the side of patriotism and Americanism if you just make sure we exercise our military might at any dust-up between any countries, particularly Russia. This is one of the warmongers that Trump had in his administration.
Going back to Benjamin Hall's point about we keep making threats... Mm-hmm. But Russia keeps escalating. Right. Tie that in with the news conference we're about to see with President Biden this afternoon. And what does that tell us about the way
See, this is how they keep you in the political plantation. Because if you think that you have to think Biden is so weak, because Biden is weak. He's a weak human being, but he's not running anything. Just because the man can't deliver a coherent thought does not mean he's running anything and that our foreign policy is on. No, it's the same Wall Street warmongers running the show now as did under Donald Trump and Barack Obama and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton and Bush 1 and Ronald Reagan. It's the same people are running the show. Doesn't matter who the puppet on the stage is for you to see in the political theater. But this is Fox News trying to get you to understand that you have to oppose everything. If Biden doesn't do enough, it's because he's weak and not exerting American leadership. So you should be cheering for more war and more military, and more money to Ukraine, more U.S. troops into Ukraine. This is how Fox News sells this to you, because Fox News is a compromised organization taking money to push war.
Vladimir Putin views the current administration here.
Yes, Sandra, thus far, this has been an epic foreign policy failure for the Biden administration. There's no other way to look around it. Biden and Blinken sent Wendy Sherman, one of their top aides, the deputy secretary of state, to try and solve this diplomatically. And that's the problem, is this administration keeps saying, oh, we want to solve this diplomatically. We want to talk through this. Well, clearly the Russians have no interest thus far in solving this diplomatically.
And that's just an outright lie. The Russians have said, if you want to talk, but we're not letting Ukraine on our border become part of NATO. We made this promise back in the late 80s that we would never move NATO one inch closer to Russia. And we violated that promise just about every year since we made that promise to Russia. Russia has said these are the things that we want. If you want to stop all these problems, leave the Russians and Ukraine alone. Don't overthrow other governments on our border. Don't station your missiles on our border. Don't do war games right off of our border. Yeah, the Russians are happy to talk. The fact is the U.S. acts like nothing they want is justified. It's just unreachable, untenable, just ridiculous demands from Russia. So she's just lying to you. This is a Trump administration State Department woman. Morgan, what's her name? Not that it matters. Nobody knows, but Morgan Ortegas.
Unless we acquiesce to their incomprehensible demands, like saying that we will never allow Ukraine, for example, in NATO. I will say, listen, I'm critical of this administration, so I'll give Blinken points. I think it was great that he went to Ukraine. It was important to have that. I was there with Secretary Pompeo, and Secretary Pompeo was there with injured Ukrainian soldiers. One of the most special moments of my time as State Department spokesperson is when an injured Ukrainian soldier pulled his strap, pulled a thing, you know, off of his uniform and gave it to Secretary Pompeo. And that spoke volumes to me about how the Ukrainians are willing to fight for themselves.
Yeah. Morgan Ortegas, always good on that. Thank you for the analysis.
Patch. Yes, I couldn't think of the word, Sandra. The patch. That's perfect. What I was thinking of.
Yeah, the patch that was given to Pompeo was probably an old SS, like from the Nazi uniform, because what America installed in Ukraine during the Obama administration was literal neo-Nazis. Literal Heil Hitler type neo-Nazis. That's what we put into the government of Ukraine. I guess one of them gave him their Nazi patch to Mike Pompeo, and he's probably got it hidden in his underwear drawer right now and pulls it out and gives it a Heil 5 every now and then. Absolutely despicable stuff. More preying on the Fox News viewer to make you think that to be patriotic, you got to make America strong, and the only way we're strong is if we face off with everybody militarily. But when you do that, you're also playing into the hands of the Democrats and the foreign policy establishment.
We have information that indicates Russia has already pre-positioned a group of operatives to conduct a false flag operation in eastern Ukraine. The operatives are trained in urban warfare and in using explosives to carry out acts of sabotage against Russia's own proxy forces. Our information also indicates that Russian influence actors are already starting to fabricate Ukrainian provocations in state and social media to justify a Russian intervention and sow divisions in Ukraine.
All right, drink. That's Jen Psaki telling you about a false flag operation, exactly the kind that we used to overthrow Ukraine in the first place and have used multiple times around the world. False flag attacks. The fact they're saying that scares the bejesus out of me because they are setting something up here. They would not have started saying false flag, which had been a term of the conspiracy theorist for the last 40 years, and now they're trotting it out as knowing that Russia's going to do this. This gives them the cover to create an incident by attacking Russia, then blaming Russia for doing it to themselves, and then we get involved militarily. A lot of people, particularly conservatives and America Firsters, may think that I am always deriding the United States, and I'm a blame America First guy, so I'll bring in a little bit of reinforcement when I come back. Stay with me. You know, I take on a lot of conservative talking points on this show, and I know that probably ticks some people off. Some people run away because they're actually snowflakes, just like the left. You know, this idea of, oh, you blame America First for everything. Well, I got to tell you, when 500,000 children die in Iraq due to the sanctions the U.S. puts on Iraq during the 1990s, what else? What is the other cause of the 500,000 children that were starved and denied medicine during the 1990s? Now, that was under Bill Clinton, started under George H.W. Bush, because I'm trying to show you there's no difference in these regimes in our government. 500,000 children died. Why aren't Christians upset about that? Because they're brown children? I don't believe that. Most people that I know are compassionate towards all of humanity. But you let people like Mike Pompeo, I actually heard him on the radio this morning on the Hugh Hewitt show, talking about the imperialism of Vladimir Putin's Russia. Drink. In our drinking game of hypocrisy, drink too for that one. You want to talk about imperialists? We've got 800 military bases around the world. We got 38,000 of our sons and daughters, moms and dads, brothers and sisters in South Korea right now, 60 years after the war ended. We are the imperial power. Russia has done nothing except protect their people, the ethnic Russians that voted to be with Russia after we overthrew the Ukrainian government and put somebody in hostile to those people. So I am a bit of a blame America First. That doesn't mean I don't love the country. It has nothing to do with our Constitution or being patriotic. It has to do with calling out these psychopaths that we have allowed, nay, cheered for. who run our foreign policy. I blame them. And they are operating in our good name. They need to be routed out of our government, and our foreign policy needs to be turned on its head to be one of peace and cooperation. Now, I know a lot of people don't like this about me because you believe it's patriotic to support your government no matter what. As soon as national security is announced, I disagree, and I have a little bit of backup here.
So while the rest of us have been distracted by Omicron, a word that's going to be the punchline of incredibly bitter jokes 5 years from now, Omicron, as that has been taking up all of our disk space, the country has inexorably been moving closer to what could be an incredibly destructive war with Russia. Our media is encouraging that war. On MSNBC, the lunatics are demanding to know why Joe Biden isn't doing more to defend the territorial integrity of Ukraine.
You know, and Tucker brings up a good point here. If you think I'm the bad guy because I'm pointing out how evil American foreign policy is, you are actually on the side of the U.S. media, which you'll hear in just a second. If you want this strong military leadership by the United States where we get to go around and deploy our troops wherever we want to because we don't like the leader, that's what they tell us. I mean, we know it's about oil and power and geopolitics and things. It's just to create more power for special interests is what wars are really about. But if you believe that Joe Biden is weak, and so it should be anything that Joe Biden does, you should demand more. Donald Trump wouldn't put up with this stuff. Well, I'm going to show you who you agree with in just a second here in Tucker's clip.
We've got to be aggressive.
This is what's his name? What's the nut job on a Joe on morning Joe Scarborough on MSNBC? You want more American leadership? Air quotes here in the studio. Well, so does Joe Scarborough, the radical leftist former Republican that's on Morning Joe on MSNBC. This is who you are in league with.
In our defense of our allies. And Ukraine, despite what you hear from Putin propagandists across the world, and yes, even here in America, despite what you hear, we have to defend our democratic allies. And it's time for the Biden White House to start speaking more clearly and more aggressively and telling us how they're going to stop this invasion from happening.
People that stupid should not have TV shows, and they certainly shouldn't be weighing in on adult topics like war and peace, but they are. So you have to ask yourself, why is this happening?
So I want you to notice that Joe Scarborough, the co-anchor of the horrific Morning Joe show on the horrific network MSNBC, is in lockstep with Fox News when it comes to these military aggressions. You find that at all odd? Don't you think that MSNBC is this radical left channel and Fox News is this conservative channel and they disagree about everything and they fight with each other and the personalities are different? But isn't it funny? Then when it comes to affairs of foreign policy in the U.S., building and continuing to support an empire, they're both on the same page every single time.
Why are the Russians so upset? Why are we moving towards some kind of...
With the exception, obviously, of Tucker Carlson.
conflict. Well, there's one reason. Over a number of different administrations...
Including the Trump administration, which heaped sanctions on top of the Russian government, Russian officials... kicked Russians out of the country and stopped, with every means necessary, stopped their pipeline. How dare they trade their natural gas with Europe or any other place in the world? We tried to shut down their ability to export one of their main exports.
The United States government has pushed Ukraine to join NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Imagine if Mexico fell under the direct military control of China. We would see that as a threat, of course. There'd be no reason for that.
That would be a war crime. That would be fighting words. When we do it, it's okay. It's just preserving democracy, supposedly.
Well, that's how Russia views NATO control of Ukraine. And why wouldn't they? We don't get anything out of pushing Ukraine into NATO. So why are we doing this? Clinton Ehrlich is a Russia policy researcher. He understands this issue quite well. And we're happy to have him join us this evening. Clint, thanks so much for coming on. So is it too simplistic to say the core dispute here is over Ukraine joining NATO?
I would say that that's Russia's perspective. But here we have people who are arguing that even if the Russians don't invade Ukraine, that we need to invade and kick the Russians out of Crimea. That was an op-ed from a senior Obama administration official this week. And so I would say that it's even simpler than that. We're dealing with our...
Now, isn't that odd that a senior Obama administration official would write a piece about the U.S. sending troops into Ukraine to kick the Russians out of Crimea? And that's the same belief that Mike Pompeo, Trump's Secretary of State, has. Isn't that interesting? I thought the parties were so disagreeable on so many things, except when it comes to foreign policy. I don't have time to play this entire clip. It's disgusting, and I meant to look this up during the break, and I got into a phone call and a text conversation with somebody. One of the scary things about this is that what they say is when the people are upset, take them to war. They try to rally you around another foreign boogeyman. This right now is really ripe for a big conflict with Russia over Ukraine or with Iran or with China over Taiwan, because people are noticing this inflation. And as I laid out in the first hour, it's going to get markedly worse. And so this is a very vulnerable time to try to get everybody back on my side, although many people may have snowflaked out on me. When I express my disgust with foreign policy establishment in every single administration, let me go ahead and I'll bash Joe Biden here. Joe Biden, another one of these that on the campaign trail talks about peace and love and how he's going to end this and end that, just like Barack Obama did, just like Donald Trump did. And he made some promises, and he's getting called to the carpet on them, and his response is just disgusting.
Mr. President, I would like to ask you about foreign policy. One of the first priority that you declared when you came to office was to end the war in Yemen, the catastrophic war in Yemen. You appointed a special envoy. Today, one of your allies, United Arab Emirates, is asking your administration to put back the Houthi rebels or militias back on the terror list. Are you going to do that? And how are you going to end the war in Yemen, sir?
The answer is... It's under consideration, and
oh, yeah, okay.
Ending the war in Yemen takes the two parties to be involved to do it, and it's going to be very difficult.
Oh, it's going to be hard, so we can't do it. We need to keep bombing the poorest nation in Yemen that's never done anything to the U.S. It could be ended in a day. We cut off all of our support, our logistics support, and our money to Saudi Arabia, who is only doing this bombing campaign on Yemen because we facilitate it. Of course, Donald Trump could have also ended that war because Congress actually voted to end the war, and Donald Trump vetoed the end of the war against the Yemeni people. Of course, again, they've done absolutely nothing to us, and he had the opportunity to stop it cold and spare the lives of innocent Yemenis, let them work out their own differences. I'm sure it's not a wouldn't be a great place to live in anyway, but at least the U.S. fingerprints of bombing innocent people in Yemen would be taken off. Let the Saudis do their own thing. See, the thing is that the Saudis, if they are left, if they're isolated to conduct this war on their own, they're going to have big problems. And so they would have to stop. But because the U.S. backs them, they continue this bombing campaign on this entirely just decimated country of extremely poor people. Again, one of the most despicable things Donald Trump did in his term was to veto ending the Yemeni war. As I said, I read the book, How to Lose Friends and Alienate People. I took its lessons away, but it's reality. It's tough love, and it's true. I'll be right back. What's your frequency? Can it be shot? Things are drained. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. Thanks for joining me today. On Fridays, we end the show taking a look at chronicling the slow slide into full-on insanity around the world in this segment called This Week on the Crazy Train. All aboard! Okay, this one is sad. I'm telling you, they're turning the animals against us. I've got a couple of stories about that today, but we'll start out with this one. That I ran across, short clip, but I mean, you know, how absurd has the world gotten? And this is a good transition between False Flag Friday and how crazy the world has become overall.
We begin with a new claim about dolphins being put to use in the military.
The Palestinian terror group Hamas released a video claiming it captured an Israeli military dolphin off the Gaza Strip. wearing a harness with a spear gun-like device capable of assassinating Hamas fighters.
That's some James Bond-style stuff, isn't it? They're weaponizing the dolphins in Israel. A couple of things here. We had a couple of wins. I don't know if this should be on This Week in the Crazy Train. This should be in a segment called Return to Sanity. But I don't have anywhere else to put them, so we're going to play these. A couple of wins. It's always good to know that the resistance is winning in many areas.
Starbucks is no longer requiring vaccine or weekly tests for its over 200,000 employees in the U.S. That's after the Supreme Court struck down President Biden's vaccine and weekly testing requirements for large businesses. The coffee giant said it will respect and comply with the court's ruling. But Starbucks did tell NTD News on a phone call that it's still encouraging all workers at its U.S. locations to get vaccinated.
Okay, there you go. Starbucks. Carhartt, I've called out. You need to immediately let Carhartt know. If you're a Carhartt customer, and I know a lot of hunters are, you need to immediately call them. I mean, I would contact them. I contacted In-N-Out Burger because they refused to participate in the vaccine passport ridiculousness out in California. I voiced my support to their organization. A listener gave me an In-N-Out t-shirt that I proudly wear. But you should let Carhartt know how disgusted you are and just tell them you'll never buy the products again. The question is, will you stick with that? I don't know. The other company that is refusing to back down on the mandate for their employees is Nike. I couldn't remember it earlier, but Nike also has stuck to the vaccine mandates. This is a really sad one, but it's encouraging. Congratulations to the people of Great Britain, to the English citizens over there that have suffered the indignity of their COVID response over there. Congratulations to them. It's a come-from-behind story. They're now more free than the United States.
This morning, the Cabinet concluded that because of the extraordinary booster campaign, together with the way the public have responded to the Plan B measures...
Now, this is kind of gross to me. This is Boris Johnson speaking to UK Parliament. And basically what he's saying is, you guys were such good servants, you were so obedient, that we're going to let you up now.
We can return to Plan A in England and allow Plan B regulations to expire. Yeah. As a result, from the start of Thursday...
I really wish our Congress did this, where they just piped up and they booed and they hissed and they called out. I don't know, there's something refreshing about it. It's real. It would be more, so much more entertaining than listening to our politicians pontificate and they refer to each other as the honorable this and the honorable that in an institution that has no honor whatsoever.
Day next week, mandatory certification will end. Yeah. Organisations can, of course, choose to use the NHS COVID pass voluntarily, but we will end the compulsory use of COVID status certification in England.
Yeah.
From now on, the government is no longer asking people to work from home.
Yeah.
And people should now speak to their employers about arrangements for returning to the office. And having looked at the data carefully, the Cabinet concluded that once regulations lapse, the government will no longer mandate the wearing of face masks anywhere.
Yay!
Mr. Speaker, from tomorrow, we will no longer require face masks in classrooms.
And
the Department for Education will shortly remove national guidance on their use in communal areas. In the country at large, we will continue to suggest the use of face coverings in enclosed or crowded spaces, particularly when you come into contact with people you don't normally meet, but we will trust the judgment of the British people.
Yeah, I don't want to give any credit to Boris Johnson. He may have done this because he was under a great deal of scandal, particularly for him just ignoring the rules that he set on everybody else. Boris Johnson is a thug, a criminal, a creep, a blood-soaked monster. So I don't give him any credit for this. But at least in reaction to his political scandal, maybe he has freed the people of Great Britain. Meanwhile, here in the United States, our response continues to be hysterical.
And the White House will be distributing 400 million N95 masks for free starting next week. This comes as the CDC updates its guidance on masks. The agency now says that N95 and KN95 masks offer the most protection against COVID-19. The masks will come from the government's strategic national stockpile, which has more than 750 million such masks on hand. Americans will be able to pick up the N95s at pharmacies and community health centers across the country. The White House guarantees that there will be 3 masks available per person, but they didn't say whether the masks can be reworn, nor whether there will be smaller sizes for kids.
Yeah, so there you go. We don't know if they can actually rewear these. I got to plug this in here. It's going to take a little bit of time from my usually scheduled segment here. But this is This Week on the Crazy Train. I ran across this yesterday because when they released these masks, I've been talking about it the past few days, it's good for a few days. Here is from the, this is like the North Dakota Department of Health is what I stumbled on when I did a search. You want to know how these face masks are supposed to be worn? Let's see here. Face mask rotation and storage. Let's say they issue 5 face masks in paper bags at a time to the employee. Label each bag with consecutive numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Label the mask with the user's name and written on the straps. Okay, the bag should be labeled with the user's name. And what they're saying is you wear a mask for a day, and then you put it into this paper sack, this breathable paper sack. And then you can pull it out again. You can do this for 4 weeks, so you can wear each one of these things 4 times. And then I wanted to play, I'll play a little bit of this video. I had it yesterday, but just ran out of time to play this. And this is the, I'm not sure who put this out, Oneida Health. It's a little bit better visually, but I think you'll get the point. This is a woman telling you how to handle the N95 mask. And here's why I think this is important. Ask yourself, any of the nut jobs, excuse me, that's really judgy, any of the victims of the hysterics that you see in the grocery store, are any of them actually handling this N95 mask properly, which means effectively? Listen to this video. It's not long. It's funnier to see. You can always email me, MikeMadison@WYEB.com. But I think Americans not really handling their masks correctly.
Hi, guys. I'm Renee. I'm a physician assistant that works with Oneida Health. We just wanted to share with you an idea we started using in our hospital to help extend the longevity of our N95 masks. It's a common issue of how do you get a mask on and off? Where do you put it? And how do you do that in a fashion that keeps it as clean as possible? The current common method is using the brown paper bag. It has its own issues, handling the mask with your own hands, taking it on, taking it off, placing it in the bag.
Remember, don't ever touch your N95 mask with your hands. That's a no-no. Wonder how many people are violating that.
Which is great. It does keep it from getting contaminated from the environment. But the bag itself becomes contaminated. The strings that are around your hair or hairnet then end up inside the mask, also contaminating your mask. So this was a solution that we saw and we started using that we found helpful and just wanted to share with you. It's as simple as a Tupperware. We just drilled holes along the sides of it to allow for some ventilation. It allows you to handle your mask, taking it on and off without ever having to touch the mask. And I'll just demonstrate for you really quick.
I'm sure Americans
are
doing this.
You place the mask up to your face.
So she's holding the Tupperware up to her face, and she's got the straps around the bottom of the Tupperware so that they're not touching the mask because they could be contaminated. And she uses her hand to peel the straps off of the Tupperware, the bottom of the Tupperware, while she's holding the Tupperware up to her face to affix the mask. She looks like a mental patient.
Mask is on. Never touched. After each use, we do like to take a Sani wipe and then wipe down the Tupperware itself as well as the lid.
Because if you didn't have OCD before, you're going to have it now.
To, again, decrease any risk of contamination. And then it goes off just as easy as it came on.
Put the Tupperware back up to your face. Pull the straps off. Attach them to the bottom of the Tupperware. Yeah, what a hero. And you put the lid back. Oh, she touched the lid without wiping it off before she sealed the N95 mask. I understand. I guess I'm making my point. Maybe this is in the category of beating a dead horse. Yeah, they put you in cough masks for 22 months before they came out and told you the truth about them, which everybody else knew, that they were completely worthless. Now they're sending out free N95 masks that'll be good for about 3 or 4 days of use in the United States. Unless you use this Tupperware thing. Now, what are most Americans actually doing with their mask? They're taking it off. They're putting it in their pocket, in their purse. They're shoving it down into the console of their car, hanging it from the rearview mirror, or throwing it on the floorboard. and they still think they're being protected. That qualifies for this week on the Crazy Train. I'll be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week. I'm that much closer to eating that avocado. I'm telling you, after a four-day fast, that avocado tastes fantastic. It's just, it's almost, almost can't speak of how excited I am about eating this avocado. But I've been fasting. If you're not fasting, then let me tell you where you need to eat this weekend, and that's your pie up in Gluckstadt. 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right across from Germantown High School. 10-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, craft beers and wine. They've got it all. A bunch of TVs if you're looking for a sporting event, but it's just a great atmosphere. This is a veteran-owned, locally-owned restaurant with a great staff. I would tell you about the outdoor dining that I love, but this weekend, maybe not the best time for that. Anyway, food's great. Make sure you download the YourPie app. You'll get all kinds of points. When you get a receipt, you just scan the barcode on the receipt, and it gives you points for free pizzas and drinks and all kinds of different stuff. That's YourPie up in Gluckstadt, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. Express your inner pizza. All right, I did this clip earlier in the week. It definitely deserves to be in this week on the Crazy Train. I found this really depressing.
This is Hunta. She's a black lab. She's 14 months old. And she's a warrior in the fight against COVID.
No.
Hunta received training to recognize the scent of the coronavirus. If she smells it, she will give a signal and then get a toy. Nothing found in this second grade gym class at the LG Norris Elementary School.
Again, this is a dog brought around to sniff the children and all of the surfaces. How paranoid do you think this makes the children on a daily basis?
In Norton, Massachusetts. So she goes on to play with some of the children. But then Hunta is brought into the school library.
Uh-oh.
Good girl.
And while first graders have music class on the other side.
You freak. Whoever this dog handler is, you should be ashamed of yourself.
...of the library, Hunta abruptly sits down. A signal that...
We do have some odor, presence of COVID odor on this bookshelf. She just, she actually just sat. Good girl. So what I'll do is I'll praise her, good girl. Let her wait it out a little bit, kind of dial it in, try to narrow it down.
We know COVID-19 primarily...
Try to find the offending child and take them down. You remember Monsters, Inc., where they found that sock came in from the little kid's room, and they slammed down a quarantine unit on it and sealed it up and shot it off, and then they shaved the monster that had come back with this sock on its back. They just take this kid, soap him down with a soapy brush and a fire hydrant hose. That's what this feels like. But I warned the dogs. I told the dogs, do not let them turn you against us. It's like anybody who serves the system, eventually they will turn on you, and it's already happening.
Authorities in Hong Kong want pet stores and pet owners to hand their pets over for culling.
See?
Over fears that they could pass COVID-19 to people. It is estimated that at least 2,000 hamsters will be euthanized after a pet shop employee became Hong Kong's first patient with an untraceable COVID-19 infection in 3 months. The government made this announcement after 11 hamsters at the Little Boss Pet Shop tested positive for the virus, according to Insider.
Look at that. They're culling the animals. I warned you, dogs. Don't let them turn you against us. Biden, I can't go without doing this one for this week on the Crazy Train. We had Joe Biden's first press conference in a year where he rambled his way through 2 hours. Obviously, the drug cocktail was up to snuff. I guess they can only administer this once a year to keep him standing straight up for and not wet himself for 2 hours. So he accomplished those two things at least. But my favorite part of any Biden thing is his get off my lawn tone.
You dispute the characterization that you called folks who would oppose those voting bills as being Bull Connor or George Wallace, but you said that they would be sort of in the same camp.
No, I didn't say that. Look what I said.
Get
Go
off
back
my lawn.
And read what I said.
You kids.
And tell me if you think I called anyone who voted on the side of the position taken by Bull Connor that they were Bull Connor.
And
that is an interesting reading of English. I assume you got into journalism because you like to write.
So did you expect that would work with Senators Manchin or Sinema?
Here's the thing. There's certain things that are so consequential. You have to speak from your heart as well as your head.
I've told you 1,000 times to get off my lawn. That's my favorite Joe Biden, is the cranky old man. Somebody asked him if he was senile.
Thank you very much for this honor. James Rosen with Newsmax.
And now this is James Rosen. I want you to listen to James Rosen kind of set up this question by kissing Biden's butt. I'll tell you why he did it in a second.
I'd like to raise a delicate subject, but with utmost respect for your life accomplishments and the high office you hold. A poll released this morning.
So the reason that this James Rosen character had to make sure he complimented Joe before he asked him this very obvious question was because during Joe's term in the Obama White House, I believe they locked this reporter James Rosen in jail for a few weeks in an obvious attack on press freedom. So I guess he didn't want to go back to jail again, but he's still going to ask the question.
By Politico Morning Consult, found 49% of registered voters disagreeing with the statement, Joe Biden is mentally fit. Not even a majority of Democrats who responded strongly affirmed that statement.
Well, I'll let you all make the judgment whether they're correct.
The question I have for you, sir, if you'd let me finish.
They're correct.
Is why do you suppose such large segments of the American electorate have come to harbor such profound concerns about your cognitive fitness? Thank you.
I have no idea.
Short and succinct. I got to go. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.